Well, 3311 is well and truly underway at Hutton. All of the Christmas decorations have been taken down, compacted and jettisoned into the heart of Proxima. There are leathery eggs in the shops already, and the newly rebuilt Centauri Megagin distillery is churning out bottles of the good stuff. The gang warfare and riots, which are an integral part of the January sales, have abated and the repairs completed. Budget Clones for You has a selection of heavily discounted clones and is obviously why they're on sale. Most of them you wouldn't let out in daylight, and the others you wouldn't trust to come to cross the road on their own. Inside the shop, they wander around asking questions. Are you my mummy? McThargoids are offering extra tentacles with every meal. Eddie Lee Wise and Sons, plus his daughters, are offering discounts on flight suits for the more Rubenesque commander. Even Wonders has a sale on. Mostly, it's just medical-looking diagrams and a percentage off, so I suppose you have to know what you're looking for. Always remember, the safe word is aardvark. Banners across the parade reel read, sale, credits off, and all stock must go. Hutneyers rush from shop to shop looking for bargains, only stopping at the various cafes and food stands for a quick cuppa and a catch-up before returning to the fray. Loudspeakers play music and announce how much prospective customers can expect to get off while people in sandwich boards meander around, getting in everyone's way. It's loud, brash and bright, just the way Hutneyers like it. Then an announcement cuts through the cacophony of commercialism and a voice says,
our mics are live! I'm Wilma Fingerdoo, and I've been using Mooncake to distract shoppers so I can grab all the best stuff.
I'm Mia Harkness, and I ordered all my discounted goodies from Gauchite.
I'm Norma Snuckers, and I've been elbowing people in the ribs to clear a path to the best bargains.
I'm Sandy Grevis, and I cleared out half of the parade with the brown noise generator so I could shop in peace.
Right. Let's get to the headlines before he sets it off again.
Chilled Commander's Marvellous Modified Mug.
Get your mind out of the gutter. Blue Galaxy isn't what you think.
A brave new world. Cryogenic Commanders return to the cockpit.
Store alert, store alert.
Bypass the boom and invest in Barnard Star with a BGS bit.
This week we have news from the top secret frozen wastes of Redacted, an icy moon on the far edge of nowhere, where Commander Drake Duran is currently stationed on a daring engineering mission, tasked with maintaining the only ship capable of operating in the harsh, near absolute zero environment, a specially adapted keelback. He's proving that even the galaxy's most inhospitable places can't keep a Hutton trucker down. Commander Drake Duran's ship isn't the only bit of Hutton engineering braving the elements. He's also equipped with a specially modified Hutton mug, a thermally insulated double-braced marvel of design. Unlike the standard issue, which relies on the ambient frameshift energies to keep drinks piping hot, this version can keep beverages warm without bursting into ice crystals the moment it's poured. It has got a Hutton logo on the lid though. Commander Drake Duran, part of Hutton's The Night Shift, American edition, his primary responsibility is ensuring that the cold adapted keelback is always ready for action, despite the constant onslaught of frost, winds and temperatures so low that even Thargoids are thinking twice about invading. The Keelback isn't alone in its adaptations. To traverse the moon's frozen terrain, Drake Duran operates a one-of-a-kind special edition SRV. Unlike its standard counterpart, this four-wheeled wonder doesn't flip over at the slightest bump. It also lacks a handbrake, a feature rendered utterly useless as the mechanism freezes solid in these conditions. Instead, the SRV relies on good old-fashioned chocks to stay in place. It's an elegant solution in an environment where traditional technology simply laughs at your efforts and proceeds to fail spectacularly. Despite the icy desolation, Commander Drake Duran has discovered a few surprising comforts. Chief among them is the installation's facilities, which inexplicably feature an exact replica of Cubicle 3. Yes, the legendary olfactory experience from Hutton Orbital seems to have been faithfully recreated, much to his simultaneous horror and amusement. "I'm not sure how they managed it," he reported, "but it's uncanny. It's like I never left." As we speak, Commander Drake Duran is hard at work, keeping the Keelback operational, sipping warm beverages from his trusty, almost but not quite, Hutton mug, and marvelling at the sheer audacity of Cubicle 3's interstellar reach. Here's to you, Commander Drake Duran. From all of us at Hutton, may your mug stay warm, your SAV stay upright, and your nostrils survive the relentless assault of space plumbing's most infamous legend. Oh, and if you happen to pencil in one more of the... I'll read that again. If you happen to pencil in one more item on the installation's scorecard rules, it's mandatory with every successful landing for the passengers to shout, "For the mug!"
In a bold move to embrace the latest in galactic communication trends, Hutton Orbital News has officially expanded our broadcast reach to a planet-side facility called Blue Galaxy, the latest shiny thing competing with the galaxy's Galtwit network. Galtwit, once hailed as the pinnacle of in-system chatter, has become oversaturated. Endless streams of "this liner is in the top 1% of all liners" and "give me all your tasty booty" have left many commanders questioning the value of reading yet another NPC's unsolicited opinion. The final straw for many came when someone tried to convince everyone that a Sidewinder had overtaken an Imperial cutter in a race. Now, instead of dodging walls of text and recycled in-system messages, Hutton Orbital News has found peace and clarity staring into the Blue Galaxy. It's quieter, it's shinier, and best of all, it's entirely free from debates about how to pronounce Leasty. However, questions have been raised about whether this particular piece of news regarding the delivery of the news is, in fact, newsworthy. An apology onion, ever vigilant in ensuring journalistic standards, or at least the appearance of them, has opened an investigation. Early findings suggest that as long as no one directly addresses this paradox, we can keep pretending it's all perfectly legitimate. Should an apology need crafting, rest assured, it'll be a masterpiece. To ensure our messages don't go unnoticed, thanks to the brilliant engineering of LCU No Fool Like One, we've wired up a special announcement automation. Every time a new episode of this very show is uploaded, the automaton broadcasts it far and wide. Why? Well, to make absolutely sure no one misses it, of course. I mean, not that anyone would miss it. I mean, surely no one has anything better to do on a Thursday night than tune into the latest news and rare commodity escapades and the occasional tale of Steve's misfortunes. I mean, if you do, well, you've got the automaton to remind you. Anyway, so next time you're staring into the void, wondering if your ship can manage another jump without the fuel gauge hitting red, why not glance up instead? As long as it's daytime and there are no clouds in sight, we'll be there, bringing you the galaxy's finest and silliest news updates.
Looking through recent messages here at the Orbital, it seems the quiet life at the Hutton Retirement Facility at Fort Mugg hasn't been as restful as anticipated. A wave of commanders who had once sworn off the cockpit have found themselves bored with holodramas, tired of backgammon, and disillusioned with the predictable charms of the medicine trolley. In a move that has delighted colleagues and alarmed orbital control staff, they're returning to active duty. Hutton welcomes these commanders back with open arms. But as they dust off their controls and recalibrate their firm shift drives, there are a few key updates and reminders they might want to bear in mind. Where did you leave your fleet carrier? For those struggling to recall where their fleet carrier was parked, it's worth checking in with Universal Cartographics. If that fails, your next stop should be the nearest scrapyard. They may have sold it off for parts after your extended absence. Just don't expect them to keep the crew entertained for 5 years. They've likely moved on to more reliable employers. Supercruise Overdrive is a double-edged sword. A recent addition to ship systems, Supercruise Overdrive allows for faster travel than ever before. However, it's not without its risks. A poorly timed activation can send the ship careening past its destination, earning the pilot not admiration but the dreaded loop of shame. Returning pilots are strongly advised to practice with caution or face an oh shit moment as the orbital goes whooshing past their fuel heads to the zero marker and it gets more than a little toasty in the cockpit. 3. What does this button do? After years away, returning commanders are often surprised by the ship's systems. That shiny new button on your console? Don't press it until you know what it does. One returning commander recently discovered the hard way that deploying all heat sinks simultaneously in a crowded docking bay isn't as helpful as it sounds. You remember that bit where we used to tell you to back up your keybinds? That's probably quite handy now that you're back to your ship. 4. What happened to Hudson? Don't you. Ignominy. A small paragraph in the history books. 5. Thargoids. It's okay. Vulcarius sorted them out good and proper. New ships? Yes. Lots of them. Feet! Well, if you've been retired that long you didn't realise you now had feet and could use them, likely you want to attend Mrs. Crabapple's beginner's class on Wednesdays just off the concourse. Bring your own crayons. That said, lots has changed, but Odin hasn't, so welcome back. We've reserved you a space at the bar. Though you still can't wait.
In a surprise move this week, the Pilots Federation has backtracked on its abrupt removal of gold, shiny, and black ship liveries, much to the relief of commanders galaxy-wide. The trouble began after Christmas, when these popular paint jobs, introduced for the festive season, vanished from station inventories overnight. Commanders eager to make their ships gleam like polished bullion or disappear into the black were left frustrated and paintless, sparking an interstellar outcry. Communication hubs across the bubble were inundated with messages ranging from polite requests to thinly veiled threats. One commander declared, "If I can't have my golden python, I'm selling it for scrap." Another added, "How am I supposed to intimidate pirates in matte grey?" Caught off guard by the uproar, the Pilots Federation scrambled to explain, initially claiming that the paints were seasonal. But in a plot twist that no one saw coming, except perhaps the warehouse droids, it turns out that the shiny stockpiles hadn't been depleted after all, and instead they were sitting untouched in inventory, gathering space dust. Realising their blunder, the Pilots Federation quickly reinstated their liveries across station systems, inviting commanders to once again exchange their hard-earned arcs for those highly sought-after designs. A spokesperson offered a carefully worded statement. "We value commander feedback and are pleased to make these options available again." Unofficial sources suggest the phrase "seasonal oversight" was muttered during the announcement. Commanders have wasted no time in restoring their ships to full glam. starports are once again awash with radiant gold corvettes, shimmering black anacondas, and shiny sidewinders that look like they've taken a dip in molten chrome. Critics, however, warn that the Pilots Federation may now be on notice. One particularly vocal commander was heard shouting, "Next time, don't touch my paint," before storming off to buy another round of gold detailing.
Welcome to this week's Hutton BGS Bit, where we knock on the door of the Hutton Situation Room, run and hide behind some buffer bins, and shout rude things at whoever answers the door until they throw their specially thermulated Hutton mug at us. This week we have finally expanded into 61 Signy, which is sadly already occupied by elite rebel force, and is also overrun by Martians in the form of the Mars Congressional Republic Navy, which is the navy you join if you can get into the Federal Navy. Or any other navy. Don't waste your time in this system, as we have another expansion pending, and this time it might actually be something good. Rooms in 22 systems this week, look them up, I can't be bothered going through that list again. Epsilon Indy has combined their boom with some civil unrest, so if you want to spice things up a bit, that's a good spot to go. Noe has an outbreak, and there are infrastructure failures in PSPF, LF2, and their NCs. There is an election in Hazel, and Banner Star is receiving investment again. But what does it all mean, I hear you ask? Well, if you want to truck it, then truck medical supplies into Noe, or food and machinery into PSPF LF2 and Narensis. You could truck in commodities and run missions in Barnard Star for fun and profit. The investment phase works like a supercharged boom, so it's a great opportunity. If you want to shoot it, well, you could always get yourself over to Epsilon Indy and swap bounty vouchers for Indy Bourbon. And that's it for this week's BGS Bit.
You know, it's very daunting when you haven't pressed the buttons in months. Your concentration is very, very fixated.
Yes.
Oh, so far, I think it's been fairly...
Seamless.
Yeah,
because I haven't seen any.
No, I haven't. Well, no. Part of it, emulated.
It's emulated to word, isn't it?
It is now.
Well, there you go, then.
I've heard it used twice tonight.
Yep.
It's emulated. Yep.
Emulated.
Is that our word of the week?
Sadly not.
No, but it might be the word of the week next week. It's like thermally insulated. I think it means thermally insulated.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's like the beginning, well, I mean, the second...
Yeah.
...of, you know, the second show of the first month of,
yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, of 2025. I'm guessing we don't have a Frontier live stream this week.
No.
Nah.
Sadly, no. I mean, okay, we've got to give them a chance.
When is the next one?
End of January. I'll have a quick look for you. It will be the
29th.
And we've got a show on the 30th.
Okay. Oh.
So that's okay.
Nice way to kick out January.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that'll work. That'll work. You also may or may not have noticed this week the Hutton run record has fallen again.
Again?
Now, if this isn't super, because somebody's working miracles, GW5000 made the run in 17 minutes and 6 seconds. That was in January the 6th.
Wow.
Damn, yeah.
That's fast.
Yeah, that's fast.
That's really fast.
Yeah. That's almost like going to a normal station.
I know, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I bet when he arrived, all the chocolate bars were still in date. Oh, dear.
So, do we have any space news? Or is what is it? Vulcarius's bit? Do we have a Vulcarius's bit? Nice.
We have a Vulcarius.
We have it later on.
For some reason, you have me, but no, you don't have a Thargoid briefing without...
Aww.
I mean, it's kind of the same as last week's one. You can go to Pleiades, you can go to the Coalsack, you can go to California Nebula. That's basically it.
You're going to need to get a new gig, mate.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, you could always, you know, ridicule our seating.
Yeah. Find the remnants of the guardians and sort of stir them up a bit.
No, you might find salvation if you do that.
Yeah.
That is an open part of the story. We don't act like that. He just disappeared. We don't know what happened. We had these suspicions that he did some sort of mind transfer. We had it was Sio Jinai visited. It was Pranav Antal. I can't remember the name of his company. He has some. Yeah, Utopia, that's the one.
Yeah. Okay.
Had some sort of visit, had some sort of meeting, then we heard absolutely nothing about it since then. So, that's kind of been left as an unknown at the moment.
Yeah. I would love to see...
Do you think the Thargoids will be back?
Well, let's see. Do I think they'll attack again? Mm. Not in the same way as before. We saw from that broadcast that clearly they've got something out of their little campaign, information about humans and how humans work. We don't know how they're using that or whether that's they're satisfied with that or what they'll want next, if anything. They're not gone, obviously, because you can still literally go and find them. Mm. Whether or not they'll invade again, that's totally unknown at the moment. Yeah.
I mean, you never know. They could go to Colonia and invade there next time.
It's fairly clear they can go really anywhere across the galaxy.
Yeah.
I barely remember how fast they were moving initially when the Titans were first arriving, but Cassio, when it was moving towards Sol, it kind of meandered a bit. Some of its jumps or zoomings between systems were kind of around 4,000 to 5,000 C, but there was somewhere it reached 100,000 C.
Wow.
Speedy. Yeah.
So, it could absolutely get to Colonia.
Mm. Yeah. I just want Guardian stuff anymore. Just more Guardian stuff. But I can't see Thargoids being finished because... all those people that bought those new ships just before Christmas.
the ones which disappeared from the... If you got in there, then you've still got a pre-built crate too, which you could refit and not have a rebuy cost on it. So
That's true.
Always a good thing for a ship. Mm-hmm. Especially with the number of times I crashed them.
But it's interesting. We just don't know what's coming next, do we?
As I generally say when asked about that, when 21 would ask me, the usual speculation here is that there's a big Thargoid and Guardian AI remnant war going on in those locked sectors by Barnard's Loop. So that's pure speculation, but that's what we think so far.
Because I always thought the AI-enhanced Guardians left, didn't they? They went away. Were they not kind of cast out and left?
This is where the lore in my mind probably hits a limit. But I thought it was that the Guardians are all gone. What remains was their AI robots that have just been replicating ever since.
Yeah, but do we know, when you say gone, does that mean left or just... died out?
Destroyed by the AIs, weren't, or something like that.
Yeah, the Guardians were almost completely wiped out by their AIs and the remnants ran away and hid, as far as I remember.
Yeah, okay.
I think the implication was they might have been completely wiped out, but I'm not sure if that was ever quite stated, so much as they were utterly defeated and humiliated because the AIs considered the Guardians to be a big threat to the galaxy or something stupid like that. So,
And it's pretty clear Guardian tech is anathema to Thargoids, and I'm feeling it's pretty clear that Thargoids realize that they've got anti-Guardian fields like the Titans do and the Glaives do, and of course HIP 22460 that still has an anti-Guardian an anti-Guardian field, and it's got the Proteus wave that's still there, so we don't know what's going on with that either.
That's interesting. Don't know what could happen next. Anything could happen.
Anything.
I suppose that's a really good way to go into the new year, where you're going, everybody's waiting for something to happen. you know, and you're like, well, what's next?
It's usually not long before something happens.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is you need a dramatic piano chord followed by saying anything could happen in the next half hour.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they finished the year in a bit of a cliffhanger, but it was a season finale.
We could make that a button.
Yeah. yeah, but it was a season finale, so you know, we're now starting the next season.
It was like a finale where if you've got a show and you've got 20% of at least 20% of your characters and they just disappear somewhere and you don't find out what happens in the finale, sure.
I'm sure that was the end of one season of Dynasty. Wasn't that where they were all supposed to be dead?
That's fairly typical of season finales when they want to make sure you tune in for episode one of the next season.
Yeah. But there we go.
So, do we have any space news?
Oh yeah, loads of space news.
Shall I press the button?
Yeah, please.
See if it works.
Go for it. When you fucking don't know where to get more space news, 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 space news. But now for the difficult bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does the website button work?
let's see. Let's go for number one.
Oh, good. I know at least, two of them are for space.com. Let's have a look and see if the rest are. University
the first one
and.
Is definitely space.com.
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah. Pretty.
160,000 year comet.
Mm hmm.
Could Which shine
might
as bright.
Be, yeah, it might potentially reach magnitude minus one.
So this is going to be another one of those things I miss.
Well, it's going to be one of those things that everybody here is going to miss because it's only really visible from the Southern Hemisphere. But other than that...
And only then if there are no clouds.
Commander Drake Durant could get a fabulous view of it.
Oh, yeah.
If the sun sets long enough, which I don't think it will down there.
Yeah.
But if there's any Australians listening, it's just about visible in the Northern Hemisphere, but very low to the horizon and just after dawn.
Somebody really should go out and look at it, shouldn't they? Because it only comes around every 160,000 years.
Yeah, if you miss it this time, you probably won't catch it next.
Probably.
But if you travel way, way south and set an alarm so that you're up stupid early to see it, it won't get past magnitude plus four and nobody will be able to see it anyway. So.
Look at that little video they've got of it, though. Isn't that stunning?
Mm-hmm. Very pretty.
That looks like, it looks like a kind of flight assist off turn around a something that's exploding.
It does, doesn't it?
But, so it's one. So the last time this comet was here was before the Ice Age, before the Woolly Mammoths. Humans hadn't left Africa. It's, you know.
Well, they were fairly equatorial then, so they'll have been able to see it.
Yeah. The last people that seen it would have been early humans.
Yeah. So we can ask them if it went bright or not. Because if it went bright last time, there's a good chance it will this time.
We don't mean early as in set their alarm for 4 a.m. humans. We mean early humans.
You mean set their alarm for 160,000 years ago, 4 a.m.
That's the kind of humans, yep. That's the kind of humans it is. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Oh dear. That's interesting then.
Mm. Well, the one thing I can guarantee is that if we didn't report on it, it would have got bright.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely. It would have been a proper one if I hadn't reported on it. So, you know, it's public service, isn't it?
We don't want people absolutely.
Don't want people getting distracted when they're driving and things.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, speaking of driving, Starship 7. Is it the flight might be in Monday?
Possibly.
Possibly, maybe.
It's rolling out to the launch pad.
Yep.
With a current planned takeoff on Monday afternoon, but that's probably local time in Texas.
That's a dramatic picture.
Which will be potentially Tuesday morning for us.
Yeah.
It's a dramatic starship.
Yeah.
Say rolling out to the pad, I should have said flounced out to the pad, probably.
Yes.
Let's face it, everything SpaceX is dramatic, even when it fails.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Especially when it fails.
Especially when it fails.
I don't know. It more sashayed out to the pad, didn't it? Than flounced. So yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna flounce back in.
Yeah, it'll flounce back in on Monday. No, I don't like the rain. The clouds are the wrong shape.
Actually, I don't know what their plan is for this flight. Maybe I should have read the story as well as just posting it in. Let's have a quick look at this.
I don't know what it's actually going to do. Yeah.
Well, it's going to go up and it's going to come down. But are they trying for orbit is the question. Interrupted flight 6 comes problems. How could they attempt?
165 feet tall.
That's pretty tall.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Oh, it's going to deploy mock satellites.
All right, that must be.
In a suborbital trajectory. So they splash down immediately. Yep. 10 cardboard boxes, I mean CubeSats. Actually, it's not even CubeSats, it's 10 mock Starlinks.
Yeah.
So it's proof of concept that it can take something chunky up.
That'll be, usually they use like concrete blocks and things like that, didn't they?
Yeah. Or Tesla Roadsters.
Or Tesla, the occasional Tesla Roadster, yeah. With a spaceman in it.
That's the one.
Yeah. Is he space flight? SpaceX made such a Starship flight 5 in October. It aimed to repeat the feat in flight 6 a month later, but communications problem with the tower scuttled the attempt. Yeah, that was the one that kind of fell apart, wasn't it?
Yeah. Went down, fell over and sank into the swamp.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one. But the 7th one stayed up!
No, it's definitely coming back down.
Okay. If it does stay up, I'll be quite concerned, if I'm honest.
Yeah. I think I heard that they're planning on doing suborbital, but in vacuum, relight of the engines to prove they can do that.
Yeah.
But they're only aiming for a suborbital trajectory just in case it doesn't work.
Aye. I think everything's got like kind of stretch goals, hasn't it?
Yeah. So we'll see what happens, but I'm sure that as soon as Elon tells us about it, it will have been an absolute success.
Yeah, by the time he tells us about it, it'll have been amazing.
Yeah.
Even if it blows up, we'll be like, yeah, but did you see the explosion?
Well, yeah, they are pretty cool.
Yeah. Right, well, that's another one done. What's next? Wish I thought to look at these. Nancy? Is this Roman Space Telescope?
What? Nancy Grace Roman.
Wow.
One of the women that was fairly instrumental in putting the Hubble Space Telescope project together has had a space telescope named after her.
Excellent.
And they've finally plugged it together, Lego style.
Oh, is it all modules then? Is it all very modular?
Well, the telescope itself has had the instrument package mounted.
Right, okay, that's good. Yeah.
So its assembly is coming on apace, which is good because it's due for launch in a couple of years' time.
Okay. But it does look quite Hubble-ish. I'm just looking at the picture below with the big door and the purple background and everything.
It's a Hubble-class telescope. It's going to be pretty flipping powerful once it gets up there with modern cameras and modern everything else attached.
Yeah.
I believe it's one of the two that the National Reconnaissance Office a few years back turned to NASA and said, we've got these two telescope mirrors for space telescope use that we haven't got a use for anymore because they're no longer good enough for Earth observation stuff.
Yeah.
Do you want them?
Yeah, because I think it's a satellite, not a military. Is it not something called a Milstar 12 or something?
Is it Keyhole or something, the satellite chain?
Right.
That they use for Earth observation. Being the NRO, they observe us a lot. And that was the one provision that NASA had to agree not to point it at Earth.
Yeah.
They couldn't use it for Earth science.
If somebody else is doing that.
Yeah, so one of them's going up to do this, and the other one they haven't got a use for yet, but they're sure to think of something because it's quite a nice mirror.
Yeah.
People are petitioning for them to send it to Mars to be a Mars orbiter.
That would be interesting.
It would be fantastic, but it's a long way to send a space telescope.
Yeah. Yeah. On its own.
Yeah.
It would have to drive itself, wouldn't it? Because of the delay. Oh, that's interesting, though. That's nice to see that they're still putting stuff like that up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the big things about this is it's going to be testing a new style coronagraph, which is like something like 5 or 6 orders of magnitude better at blocking distant stars, which means that they're going to be able to directly image Jupiter-sized planets.
Okay.
Nice.
Around stars up to tens, hundreds of light years away.
Yeah.
It'd be rather cool.
That is good.
Normally they're just lost in the brightness of the star, so...
Yeah, because that's normally, it's normally the measure, they don't measure, they don't look at the actual planet, they measure the dip in brightness, don't they?
Yeah. But this one, like I say, it's 6 or 7 orders of magnitude, some ridiculous thing like that, a million times better than anything they've had before.
So it's going to look directly at planets in a different solar system?
Yeah, and stick its thumb in the way to block out the star, so it's looking next to it. But unfortunately... It's still about 3 or 4 orders of magnitude, not good enough to be able to take a picture of Earth or an Earth-type world in an Earth-type orbit. But it's a big step in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yes, very.
Incredible.
That's cool.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It just shows the way the technology's coming on. It's like leaps and bounds because, you know, when I was a kid, we had, you know, Voyager went up and everybody went, ooh. And now you're looking directly at planets in different solar systems, which is just mad. Couldn't have dreamed of that kind of thing back then.
When Voyager went up, we didn't even know if there were planets in other solar systems.
Yeah, that's a point.
We assumed there was a good chance, but we had absolutely zero evidence of it.
I think there was that thing as well where it was kind of said that, it would happen, but it would be the exception. And then, since Kepler, they went, no, they're everywhere.
Yep, anywhere they could be, they seem to be.
Yeah, that's incredible. They are full of vermin, that's what they are.
Well, this one is,
this one certainly is.
Like seams in a Hutton broadcast.
There's a lot of them.
No, there's not that many.
Yeah, you can go too far, come on then.
I suppose there's only so much mass in the galaxy. Yeah, there can't be that many planets.
Maybe that's the solution to dark matter.
Yes.
Putting seams are massive.
Putting seams, yes. I have a look at that. Look at Mercury. I mean,
there's some even better pics further down the article.
Yeah.
I better scroll.
Yeah, but look at the row of craters.
But speaking of putting your thumb in front of the camera.
Yeah. Yes.
That's Bepi Colombo putting its thumb in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Repeatedly.
Is that a shadow or does Mercury look a bit egg-shaped?
That's a shadow.
Okay.
Yeah, Mercury, with its lack of atmosphere, the side that's facing the sun gets stupid hot. And the side that's baked, and then within moments when its day progresses, the cold side gets stupid cold.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it Mercury where a year or a day is longer than a year?
No, that's Venus.
Is it?
Yeah. Mercury, it's 3-2 ratio. Its day is 2/3 the length of its year.
Okay.
So that's for really, a long time, they thought it was actually tidally locked, but it isn't. It's in a resonant orbit.
Yeah.
Because every time they observed it, it was in the same place in its orbit, and it was completely late. So it was always at the same point in its day.
Yeah, they were
well.
Always seeing the same picture. Yeah.
So according to the Universal Cartographics, the system map of Sol, Mercury has an orbital period, so a year of 88 Earth days, and it has a rotational period of 58.6 Earth days. So it's pretty much. Take a look at Venus. Right, what have we here? Volcanism. Orbital period of Venus, 224 Earth days, but the rotational period is 243 Earth days. Yeah, that is actually a little bit longer, yeah.
Yep, it spins slowly backwards on its axis.
It goes the wrong way as well, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. And nobody knows why.
Because it likes to be weird.
Is it Neptune that does the same? Does one of them does the same?
Neptune is over on its side.
Yeah, it's over on its side, but I think, does it not travel the wrong way as well?
Well, over on its side, there is no right or wrong way. It's over on its side. Rather than being 180 degrees round, it's 90 degrees
round.
I
think somebody's built a space station in one of the rings and tipped it.
Could be. Like one of those spinning tops that finally falls over.
It's just the belt's up there that's too heavy.
It is spinning really quickly, though. So that was Neptune all the way out there. Orbital period, 60,000 Earth days. The rotational period, 0.7 Earth days.
Yeah.
So, okay, maybe not really, really quickly. Like, it's spinning only a little bit quicker.
No, that's really for a planet that size, spinning faster than Earth is pretty quick.
Yeah, like Earth mass is 17.15, so,
yeah.
It's a wonder it doesn't fly apart.
Yeah, but 17 Earth masses, but what is its Earth radiuses?
If the thing would get out of the way, the Earth radii, it's... Oh, well, the radius, it's 24,000 kilometres. Earth will be 6,000-something kilometres.
Yeah. 6,400, give or take.
It's a good bit bigger than Earth.
24,000 kilometres, that's...
4 times Earth,
That's about the same as the circumference of the Earth, isn't it?
So the orbital velocity at that point... Yeah, it'd have to be spinning a lot faster than that. You'd have to get down to ballpark guesstimate of about a 2-hour day before it'd start tearing itself apart.
Yeah. Insane, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, something that size, 0.7 of a day. That's awesome.
If anybody in chat wants to do the maths, please feel free to correct me on that. It's a guesstimate, but it's roughly the right order of magnitude, I think.
Yeah, so Mercury looking great.
Mm.
It's very pretty.
It is.
I've clicked on the wee link at the bottom where you can follow it and see more pictures, and it is just... I mean,
it's... Can I put that link in chat so people can...
Yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah, they're the best pictures of Mercury we've ever had, and the spaceship that took them, the craft that took them, was British made.
Yay!
Which probably explains why it's sticking its thumb in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Hold on a wee second, I need to mute this. Yay. Oh! There we go. That's the link to the pictures. I like the one with the big line of volcanoes. I don't know if it's volcanoes, it's certainly craters. There's a big line of craters and a vertical line.
Yeah, it's a great one, that one.
Yeah. Right on the Terminator as well. Right. So, can we call an Into Space News then?
Okay.
I think we can. Do you want to hit the button?
I'll hit the button.
Yay!
When you don't know where to get more space news, 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 space news.
So we don't have a Vulcarius' bit. It would normally come now, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, we kind of had that, didn't we?
We could just stand around and stare at him until he blushes in embarrassment.
That could take
doesn't
a while.
Work very well on radio, though, so...
Yeah.
So, do we have a word of the week?
We do have a word of the week, and word of the week this week is Dimberdamber.
Dimberdamber?
A Dimberdamber.
What does that mean?
A timber damper is the leader of a gang of criminals.
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
Try stopping me. We haven't heard much from Dimber Damber Don Antonacci in a while.
Okay. Well, for anyone who's interested, it is coming across your screens in the form of a headline now. And I've just realised I don't have a space fact button.
Oh, no! Fortunately, we do still have space facts.
Let me just double check everything. Yeah, I do not have a space fact button yet.
Oh, man. Somebody's let you down.
Space,
oh!
There
you
go.
Lots of space facts that straight to your
your brain. Beam from Hutton straight to your brain.
Straight to your brain. This week we're looking at neutron stars. Now most of you will be familiar with these from the game as small white stars with swirling cones which supercharge your FSD, but there are some other things you might like to know. They're really small, with most measuring about 12 miles in diameter. They're dense. Neutron stars are the densest objects in the universe that astronomers can directly observe. A teaspoon of neutron star material would weigh 10 million tons, or the same as the entire population of Earth, even after Christmas. As their name would suggest, they're made up of neutrons, which are formed when the core of a massive star collapses, crushing protons and electrons together. They're hot, with temperatures that can exceed 1 million Kelvin. They are magnetic. Neutron stars have extremely strong magnetic fields, billions or trillions of times stronger than Earth's, and would immediately remove all of the iron from your body, which would be bad. They are fast. Now, we were talking about... not Uranus, Neptune. We were talking about Neptune there. But neutron stars rotate very rapidly, sometimes up to 60 rotations per second. Many neutron stars are observed as pulsars, which emit periodic radio waves. The pulses are caused by a misalignment between the neutron star's rotation axis and its magnetic axis. Jocelyn Bell first observed neutron stars in 1967. Her thesis advisor, Tony Hewish, won the 1974 Nobel Prize for Physics for the discovery. They observed the first pulsar to be discovered, pulsar LGM1, which emitted a signal every 1.3 seconds. Bell, Hewish and some other team members thought that they may have discovered an artificial signal sent by an intelligent species and named it LGM1, for Little Green Men, number one. You can even go there in-game, or a version of it at least, and we've got the coordinates, which I can post into the chat.
Go read them to us.
Okay, the system is located at minus 7533.46875/557.34375/514.125. Galactic coordinates are 9128.003/I 55.777/B 3.501. Equatorial coordinates, right ascension, 19 hours 21 minutes 44.820 seconds. Declination, 21 degrees 53 minutes, I think that is 2.54584 seconds. And that's it for this week's Space Facts. I see, manually trying to put Space Facts on again.
Space Facts, lots of Space Facts that everyone wants to know, need to know. Think from bottom straight to your brain.
Flossy.
That's enough of that.
Pardon?
Are you ready, what? Flossy?
Yeah.
Yep, okay, here we go.
It's Flossy.
Hello, Flossy here with this week's Community Goals News. There aren't any CGs this week. Sorry. That's it for this week's CG News.
I've actually got a special button here, specifically if there's no CGs. This is a new button, first time I'm pressing it, so here we go.
All right, okay.
No CGs this week, what can I say? Flossie's got no tasks, no work, no play. The galaxy's calm, no goals in sight. Just sit back and relax, everything's all right. No hauling, no fighting, no tasks to do. Flossie's got no news, it's all up to you. So grab a mug of gin, or maybe two. This week is quiet, no CGs for you. No calls for trucks, no missions to bring. Not a single thing, not a single ping. The stars are quiet, the stations too. Guess it's time to chill, nothing's on cue. No hauling, no fighting, no tasks to do. Flossie's got no news, it's all up to you. So grab a mug of gin, or maybe two. This week is quiet, no CGs for you. No calls for trucks, no missions to bring. Not a single thing, not a single ping. The stars are quiet, the stations too. Guess it's time to chill, nothing's on cue. No hauling, no fighting, no tasks to do. Flossie's got no news, it's all up to you. So grab a mug of gin, or maybe two. This week is quiet, no CGs for you.
I quite like that.
Very good, very good.
Finally, an AI-free version of the song for those that were upset by it.
Yeah. And who was that singing?
That was my other half.
Very good. Brilliant, that.
Also playing the piano. The piano, yeah. The guitar, the drums, very, and the strings.
Wow.
Very skilled, yeah. Oh, wonderful.
Not all at the same time, obviously.
No.
No.
How do you know?
Because I know.
Because you'd need two hands for each piano part, one for, or two for the guitar, two for the strings. Oh my God, I'm married to a Thargoid.
I just imagine one of the one-man band setups where you stamp on a pedal and a cymbal clashes.
No, she just kicks me and I hit the drum.
Yeah, okay. Same thing.
Yeah, close enough.
So are we ready for some Galnet news?
Ready for some Galnet news.
Or no, I better stop Flossie's thing first.
Flossie told you what to do.
Yay!
Right, here we go for some Galnet.
Galnet News Digest, 9th of January 3311. We read the news, so you don't have to. In this week's news, as we enter a new year, Shadow President Archer is in a bit of a pickle. Anti-Xeno pilots are taking the fight to the Thargoids. And pilots report that things seem to be a lot slower than they used to. The power vacuum resulting from the Thargoid attack on Sol in December has led to some interesting times for Federal Shadow President Jerome Archer. With the federal government retreating to Eta Cassiopeia, there was no one left to look after the Republican Party leader Jerome Archer's power base. After the Thargoids left, Imperial forces, who'd been assisting the Federation in eliminating the Thargoids, proved surprisingly popular in these core federal systems. Princess Ashing Duval, who remains the Imperial liaison to anti-Xeno agency Aegis, proved particularly popular in Sol, where she established a small presence. Archer has this week managed to stamp out that Imperial presence at the federal seat of government. But the neighbouring system, Barnard Star, continues to have sizeable popular support for the Prismatic Princess, at least for now. Archer's rumoured to be using the banned Proactive Detection Bureau, as well as power agents, to quell the wave of pro-imperial sentiment. It seems unlikely that even such a popular leader as Duval can outlast the anti-free speech techniques employed by Archer. The systems around Sol have never looked so diverse. Yuri Grom and Lee Yong-ri have long-held systems adjacent to Sol, such as Sirius and Epsilon Indy. But Imperial Slaver and mining mogul Senator Zamina Torval has an increasing presence in systems close to Sol, systems such as Tulfa, Lumen 16, and Trepin. President Winter's heartlands in the Federal territories have barely been touched by the fallout from the Thargoid War. Archer will have to work hard to re-establish his territories and to salvage his reputation.
An estimated 1,000 anti-Xeno pilots are taking the fight to the Thargoids on Sunday. Following the successful defeat of the Thargoid invasion of the human-occupied bubble in December, there remains just one known system where the hostile sort of Thargoid can be found. This is HIP-22460, the system where Salvation and Azimuth built the anti-Xeno superweapon that started the war, and where Salvation was killed by the Thargoid backlash against the weapon. It's a hostile environment, swarming with Thargoids, and with an anti-Guardian field that makes most Guardian technology useless. There are the wrecks of Federal, Imperial and Alliance megaships, as well as Azimuth's two megaships, the Bright Sentinel and the Golden Prospect, and the Black Flight megaship, the Overlook, as well as countless debris fields from smaller ships that were destroyed on that fateful day in August 3308. On the ground, there are a number of barnacle sites and barnacle forests, and the Project Seraph operations base, Fort Ash. There were two Thargoid imprint sites on Moon 10b. These are believed to be crashed Thargoid motherships. The similarity with the underside of Thargoid Titans is striking. One of these sites was used by Salvation to magnify the effect of the Proteus wave, and by the Thargoids to magnify the effect of their shutdown field, and the massive residual pulse can still be seen clearly from orbit. Sadly, Moons 10A and 10B are now both permit-locked for safety, so it is no longer possible to visit these ancient and probably highly dangerous structures. It is near these moons, and the wrecked megaships that still orbit them, that the Anti-Xeno Initiative and the Xeno Strike Force plan their attempt to wipe out the Thargoids by sheer force of numbers. Around 1,000 pilots have already signed up, and more are expected to turn up on the day, Sunday, the 12th of January. Because of the very large number of pilots taking part, potentially one of the largest anti-Xeno combat zones ever seen, it is essential to register in advance and to set up your ship appropriately. The materials for anti-Guardian zone resistance are no longer available, but if you don't have suitably modified Guardian weapons, enhanced AX multi-cannon and enhanced AX missile racks will serve admirably. Recommended Crate Mark II builds and general but important advice for those taking part is available from Commander Mechan. It may be an impossible task to blockade the system, but it will give many commanders satisfaction just to take part. This may be the first very small step on a path that leads us to the Thargoid homeworld, if such a thing exists. Remember to sign up if you'd like to take part and have your ship on a nearby carrier. The event will start at 19:30 Galactic Time.
Over the past few weeks, commanders have been reporting a number of disturbing signs that all is not well in the galaxy. Hyperspace jump times, previously less than 20 seconds, are now commonly taking 60 seconds or more to complete. Limpets quite happily collect goods and materials, but when they arrive back at the ship they seem to lose their sense of purpose, and can sometimes take a couple of minutes to deposit what they've collected into the cargo scoop. For those on foot, getting stuck in a data terminal, or finding that you have to restart a mission you were already halfway through when you briefly lose consciousness and wake up back in your ship, it's a constant hazard. For those who just need one more black box to complete their weekly assignment, and who have a limpet holding that one black box a defiant couple of metres away from your ship as the opposing power's agents close in to attack, is frustrating and sometimes fatal. Imagine, though, how their randomly extended jump times will affect any future buckyball races, or, far worse, how difficult it makes the fuel rats work, with dramatically extended journey times. When they eventually arrive at their client, who may have only seconds of oxygen left, long jump times can be the difference between life or death. For those travelling from the bubble to Colonia, travel time is doubled. Meanwhile, minor factions remain unable to expand into new systems following the dramatic boosting of faction status from power play activities. If expansions were allowed to take place, there would be chaos. And for those indulging in merit gathering for power play, there are still activities such as delivering rare goods and rescuing escape pods that earn no merits. There are still weekly missions that are impossible to complete, such as being tasked to hack holographic adverts that don't exist, or being asked to sell organic data in a system that has no vistagenomic outlets. Let's hope that the Pilots Federation can take some time out from their plans to deregulate colonisation to work out why so many things in the galaxy seem so unusually slow. And that's our very first Galnet News Digest of 3311. Galnet News, we read the news, so you don't have to.
Yeah, that was Beetlejuice and Witherspoon with the Galnet News Digest. And what's next? Oh, my goodness, do we have a rares?
We do.
We've got a Galnet rare. But yeah. Well, you can't introduce yourself, so I'll do the introductions.
True. This
one's
snuck up on me. Yeah, you go for it.
Yep. So next we have Amelia Hawk with this week's Galnet Rare Digest.
You are about to listen to Amelia Hawk. She tries all the galaxy's most dangerous rare items, so you don't have to.
Bizarre that its local wildlife has evolved techniques beyond survival and into outright defiance of the natural order. The Epsilon Indy system, deep within Hutton space, has a number of natural wonders in it, and New Africa is high up on the list of must-see places. If you could visit Earth of the 19th and 20th centuries, pop down to Africa, pick it up with a giant tractor beam and then use it to make an entire planet, then you'd have a close approximation of New Africa, hence the name. Oh, okay, so the gravity's a bit higher and the atmosphere's a bit thicker, but stand at the parted flaps of your tent on the savannah and watch a sunrise and you can almost hear refrains from Circle of Life. Wild animals walking across the horizon during a sunrise? Check. Animals intent on treating camps of people like a handy snack bar? Check. Camera crews driving around in converted SRVs trying to film everything? Check. big moon passing overhead every minute or so. Check. Okay. That one's not from old Earth. Our moon is, by comparison, a sedate thing. Slowly adjusting the tides and waxing and waning at a steady pace. Mitterrand Hollow, however, that's a moon on speed. He's had too much caffeine. It's late for something. I'm not sure what, but it's trying to get there in a hell of a hurry. The unique lunar cycle on New Africa has led to some strange evolutionary developments, and I'm here to investigate the New African moon bison. Imagine an oversized and very sturdy looking bison. Perfectly adapted to the gravity and thick atmosphere of the planet, bioluminescent fur glowing faintly in the dense air, ambling along a savanna under a 1.58 G gravity. Oh, I mean, I say ambling. It's more of a stampede. A permanent stampede. Okay, not that fast, but it has a lot of mass. An awful lot of mass. Before I talk about that, let me explain the reason for their glow. Symbiotic microorganisms that make the fur the galaxy's only self-cleaning material. Immune to dirt, resistant to stains, and somehow even repels liquids. If you spilled your drink, it's wiped clean. Grease from your bacon sandwich, gone in a flash. The horticulture industry has practically declared war on the species, snapping up pelts to create dresses, upholstery, and for some reason, deluxe baby bibs. The moon bison often shed these magnificent pelts as they move towards the more equatorial regions of the planet. After all, it's hot there. Of course, all this has turned the moon bison into a prime target for hunters, driving these majestic beasts to near extinction. Not, as one might imagine, by actually killing the bison directly, but by disturbing their natural rhythms, chasing them with quadcopters and SRVs. The bison's mating habits suffer dreadfully when they get disturbed. And so here I am, with Steve, Mooncake, and a cunning plan to observe these fluffy, glowing titans without getting in the way of their natural rhythms. Before we set off, a word about the stampedes. They're permanent. The herd is startled by the passing of shadows over their path. They're startled by just about anything. And with the moon passing so frequently, they're always startled. Eyes wide, nostrils flaring, they play a giant dance of follow my leader, sometimes for months on end. The stripes you see on the savannah, they're not geology or botany, they're moon bison trails, stretching as far as the eye can see, as straight as an arrow until the moon passes again, and then they take an angular change in direction and they're off again. These creatures don't just live on the move, they do everything on the move. Grazing, mating, even giving birth, all accomplished without missing a beat. And that makes it a challenge to observe them. If they spot us, or even worse, get spooked by us, their path will change and the carefully choreographed dance across the savannah will be disrupted. If they don't turn by just the right moment, someone gets left behind, or they crash into another stampeding herd, and then no one is in the mood for the future of the species. So, Steve, have you found one of their pelts? Ah, good man. Just drape it over the quad bike. We can hide under it and try to follow one of the herds. It's okay, Mooncake can sit in the basket at the front. Don't worry. She'll be fine. Okay, Mooncake's now sitting in her basket, looking supremely unimpressed, mostly at Steve, because, he picked her up. Oh, shut up, Steve. It's only a scratch. Stop being a big baby. Right, we set off. By the sign of the cloud and dust just to our left, there's a herd on the move, and I can feel it through the ground. Other creatures are scattering, a sure sign that a herd is approaching. I've got the binoculars. We just need to get alongside the herd. Perfect, they haven't seen us. Just drive like you're a moon bison while I get some pictures. How do you drive like a moon bison? I don't know. Just follow the big one in the front. Do it like you're, I don't know, lumbering along or something. That's not funny, Steve. Hang on. The moon is passing and they're turning. Oh my God, this is awesome! Right a bit, Steve. Yeah, but that's it. Just follow the herd. You're going a bit fast. Crap, they're behind us now. You're following the big one. I don't like them being behind us like that. I think we need to turn away a little. Crap, they're following us. Steve, where did you get this pelt? It was lying on the ground behind the herd? It was a smaller one, as the big ones are too heavy. Steve, this is a female moon bison pelt. Yes, they're following you now. They think you're a moon bison cow. We just speed up a bit. I know they're roaring. They're Randy. And you look like a moon bison version of Jennifer Lopez. Oh, okay. You drive. I'll do the article. Okay, we're speeding across the savannah now. A quad bike bouncing over rocks. The bellowing moon bison are still following us. The males are relentless and the ground is shaking. Steve, they're gaining on us. Look, that bull's right behind us. What the heck was that? Okay, we were just missed by what I can only describe as a high-velocity wet projectile. What do you mean this is how they mate? They fire at the moon cows? Mating is target practice? Oh, that's disgusting. That was another shot right into the back of Steve's helmet. I know it's running down your neck. Just drive. How was I supposed to know they mated? I thought they just climbed in onto each other at a run or took a quick break or some, you know, for some nookie or something and then caught up with the herd. I've grabbed the throttle and given it a twist. As soon as the bison fall back into the distance, we've found a rock formation here we can hide in. The bulls, apparently losing interest, have rejoined the rest of the herd. They're thundering off into the distance. Okay, Steve, let's get you cleaned up. Oh, wow, that stuff is everywhere. Just strip off. I'll get a canteen and wash you down. Okay, that's odd. Steve, you're glowing, especially, well, in the belly department. Steve, I think you might be pregnant. This is Amelia Hawke reporting for the Galnet Rares Digest. Next week, I'll either have a fascinating update on human moon bison hybrids or a very awkward conversation with the medical profession. Either way, I think Steve needs a nap.
All I can say is that it's a good job Steve was behind you on the bike.
I know, right?
Congratulations, Steve.
It's a boy.
It's a bull.
That could be awkward come buffing time.
It's nice to see a new one, and that is one hell of a new one.
Yeah. I would certainly get Steve something to bite down on come buffing time.
Mm. Oh, he'll be fine. Steve's, he is like the fifth Steve we've had or something like that. But, I mean, you know, Steve's always fine.
But that one, he's lasted longer than the others.
Make sure he invites us all to the baby shower, though.
Yes, we need to do one of those things where you pull a string and you find out if it's a blue balloon or pink balloons.
Just green. You can pull it, it's just a green balloon. You're like, I don't know what it means.
A glowing one.
Or a four-legged balloon with horns.
And a massive head. Yeah, a massive head with horns on it. Good luck, Steve.
Just pray for a breech birth.
Yeah.
I've run out of script stuff.
Yeah.
Are we done?
That seems to be it.
I think that's the end. Yeah.
Wow.
Don't get tired of going and watch television and things and do stuff.
I know, we could have like a movie.
Yeah.
Wow.
As long as it doesn't feature Steve.
Well, yeah. I'm going to go and see Nosferatu next week.
Well, the classic.
To go and see the new one.
Oh, the new one.
The new one. Yeah.
You need to tell me the classic
one. Yeah. But the classic one, I think, is probably kicking about in the internet somewhere, you know?
I have been meaning to see that one called Voyage of the Demeter.
Oh, yeah. That would be interesting. Aye. Because that was a Dracula one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was a ship for Dracula.
Yeah, it was the ship that brought him over from Transylvania.
Yeah. Although at the end up he was steering it himself.
Yes. Well, I mean, magically.
But he did everybody. Yeah, leave one alive. Leave the helmsman alive.
Just the one.
Yeah, just the one. Just behave yourself. You know, it's like Jaffa Cakes, though.
He's a snacker. What can we say? Yeah,
exactly. It's like Jaffa Cakes. You can't leave one in the packet.
Now I want Jaffa Cakes.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
Well, as I'm button pushing, does someone else want to do the big at the end thing?
Lossie's usually good for that.
She is, isn't she? Lossie?
I'll do what I can for...
All right.
A cough. Right. But,
you ready?
All right. Okay.
For the mug.
No journey too long and no cargo too small. The profit margins never really mattered at all. We're gonna take the cargo where it's needed today. Super cruising all across the Milky Way. We'll take anything, anytime, anywhere. Loading out the T-Nas to the brim with grain. Crash into the sun. Swivel acts the pilot on the Xbox One. Alvin at the front, you know he leads us well. Trucking across the galaxy, now everybody yell.
Follow the mug, follow the mug.
Yeah, you know just where we're coming from.
Follow the mug, follow the mug.
Now everybody sing the Hutton Trucker song. Today, super cruising all across the Milky Way. We'll take anything, anytime, anywhere. So shout it out loud like you don't even care.
Father Mug, Father Mug.
Yeah, you know just where I'm coming from.
Father Mug, Father Mug.
Now everybody sing the Hutton Trucker song.
Song.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the end of the show. Everyone's buggered off now, so why don't you bugger off too?
Seamless.